Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Saturday, June 5th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and we had a special Friday night edition of AEW Dynamite. I don't know why it was special other than it was on Friday instead of Wednesday, but that's why we're here on Saturday morning. Because, guys, I can't stay up that late and watch the show and then record a podcast because I'm old and I need my sleep. But we're here Saturday morning reviewing Dynamite. Let's get right into it. Alright, you guys, let's not waste any time and just jump on into this show. We started off Dynamite this week with Death Triangle, Pac, and Penta versus the Young Bucks. Before the match could get underway, though, we get a bunch of recap about the three BTE triggers to Jon Moxley and explaining why Jon Moxley is going to be out of action for a little while. And then before the match could start again, Frankie Kazarian comes in and attacks Michael Nakazawa during the entrances and essentially everybody just stands there and watches, and then when he's done, they start chasing him. It was weird. It was poorly done, in my opinion. But I like that they're sticking with this whole Frankie Kazarian is on, like, a mission to take out all of the members of the Elite, and someone's calling me. All right, anyways, as I was saying, this was a good match for the most part. I'll say it did not live up to my expectations. I mean, this is the Young Bucks versus Death Triangle. In my opinion, probably the two greatest tag teams in the world right now. Again, I don't know. Death Triangle is a faction, I guess, technically. Let me put it this way. Four of some of the best competitors in the world right now in regards to pro wrestling. And so I had way higher expectations for this match. I think a big problem with it was that the production was kind of crap, and I don't know whether or not to blame the production of the wrestlers, honestly, because I'm not versed enough in the production of pro wrestling to know. But I mean, there were a few spots, particularly there was a knee drop by, I think it was Matt Jackson to Pac, and the camera cuts to like a better view of it, and you can clearly see that Matt just didn't hit Pac with the knee at all, completely missed. So I don't know whether that's the wrestler's fault or whether that's the production's fault for exposing that. So, you know, it's just a lot of botches, a couple of botches like that. And I struggle to even call them botches because I don't necessarily know if that's what I mean. But I just, you know, there were some really cool moves in this match as well. There was an awesome back body drop to Pac on the apron and a flip pile driver by Penta to Matt Jackson on the apron. That was like the noise of Matt Jackson's skull hitting the apron is still ringing in my ear this morning. So, but essentially at the end of the day, the Young Bucks cheat to win per usual, get the pinfall with a folding press from Nick Jackson on Pac. And, post-match, they start to attack Penta and, try to hit the BTE trigger on him. And then Eddie Kingston comes out to make the save. Interesting dynamic there, obviously, with Eddie Kingston and Penta's history. And obviously, we'll get into the interview later on with these three. But yeah, guys, I mean, I don't know. There was like that funny stuff with the referee getting distracted. And it was another funky finish by the Young Bucks. And I get it. I think the Young Bucks are okay to do this stuff right now. But I mean, we're going to get into talking more about this later on the show, but there were a good amount of distraction finishes going on in AEW lately. And, you know, I like to consider myself an unbiased journalist, for lack of a better term, I guess. And so if I'm, you know, shaming it on WWE's TV, I have to shame it on AEW too. I get it. And I think AEW is way less of a criminal of the distraction finishes and whatever. But I mean, there were a lot on this show, and there has been a lot going on in general. I was pretty forgiving and understanding of the Hangman Page Brian Cage match that kicked off Double or Nothing on Sunday this week. That finish, the distraction finish, made sense to me. But I mean, when you start to do it this often, I'm starting to get a little annoyed with it. So I will leave it at that, guys, because I don't want to. I continuously have a faith in AEW that they see these things and they know it, and it's not going to be a problem later on, I guess. So, yeah, overall, an okay match. Again, not what I, you know, these guys, this crappy part about, I guess, being such amazing wrestlers and having such a really amazing wrestling show is that when the match is kind of 3 stars or subpar, you're kind of disappointed because you just expect better at this point, and that's where I guess I was at. I expected way more of this match, and I didn't get it. So I'm sure they will run it back at another point, and I'm excited to see that. But I just, you know, oh, side note too, about the Young Bucks. I want to talk about this, I guess. I love the Young Bucks heel characters, and I think they love it too, and you can clearly tell. And I think I love the way they play off the crowd. I mean, how good is it to have a crowd again, guys? I think that is really well done. I think they get the idea of being heels, but also must see. And that's the important part of being a heel, because you don't want to be a cool heel that people cheer, but you also don't want to be, like, change the channel heat. So it's this funny balance that you have to find. But to me, the theatrics are kind of getting a little bit much. And what I mean by that is I feel like it's exposing the business a little bit. And I don't know how best to explain that. I guess, like, I like the fake, you know, or the playing off the hot tags. And, you know, I love Matt Jackson's shimmy walk. I think that's hilarious. But, like, the over-exaggerated nature of a lot of the stuff is almost like, is almost making fun of pro wrestling rather than just making fun of the nuances of pro wrestling, if that makes sense. I guess I'd love to hear what you guys think. You know, you can always email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Curious to hear your guys' thoughts on the Young Bucks. You know, what you think of is it too much? Is it getting to be? And when I say too much, I don't mean like too much. Like, I love the shining of the shoes and Michael Nakazawa and you know, Brandon Cutler, and I love all that stuff. But is it getting to be too much with just the, does anybody else feel like their theatrics are kind of exposing the business a little bit, I guess is my question I'm posing to you guys. And I might just be the only one who feels that way. But, again, the distraction finishes to this with Brandon Cutler getting involved, and like, it's getting old. And not to mention the whole heel thing of like, oh, we have a lot of money and that's why it makes us a heel. Like, we dress really nicely and we have a nice, like, a lot of nice things. Like, okay, Private Party, The Pinnacle, The Young Bucks, just to name a few. Like, can we get a little bit of originality in the whole heel dynamic? I just think, like, a lot of people have that same baseline of their gimmick. Oh, we have a lot of money, we buy nice things, and that's what makes us a heel. You know, of course, there's a bunch of other things on top of it. But, like, anybody else noticing that, like, common thread through all the heels? It's because we have a lot of nice money. Or, because, not nice money. We have a lot of money and have a lot of nice things. And we're, you know, pricks about it. So, anyways, let's move on, guys, to the next match. The next segment. Back from commercial break, we get Tony Schiavone in the ring to introduce the world's strongest man, guys. Ashley and I did not talk about this, I think, on the Double or Nothing review, and that is our fault. My fault, not her fault. My fault completely, because I totally forgot to bring it up. But Mark Henry is to be a commentator, I suppose, on Rampage. I think that's the plan. You know, he came out and basically said that he's here to not fix AEW, because it's definitely not broken, but he's just here to turn a few screws. And Tony asks him if he's going to wrestle, and he says right now he's not going to say yes, but he's still got a lot left in the tank. And, you know, as we speak, guys, I'm going to look up, how old is Mark Henry? And I guess it doesn't matter so much, because we just saw Sting do a crossbody and a suplex and wrestle an amazing match, I thought, on Double or Nothing. Okay, so Mark Henry's only 49. That's not that bad. I don't know why he looks older to me. Maybe it's the fact that he doesn't have hair anymore. He's rocking the look. I'm not saying anything else. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys. Like, the Big Show and Mark Henry getting back in the ring, I'm not like super keen to see that. Maybe that's just me. But I'm not like, I just, there's so much talent on AEW right now. Again, always, if it is in service of elevating new talent, I'm all for it. But, I don't know. I think Mark Henry absolutely was underutilized in WWE for sure. And also did a lot of things before I was born in WWE. So I can give my, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, take that with a grain of salt, as you guys should when I talk about Sting. Because, again, I wasn't around for that. So, you know, I just think we don't want to overstate Mark Henry as a wrestler. Like, he's definitely going to be a great asset for AEW. But I almost feel like he's going to be a better asset similar to Christian Cage. Like, I almost feel like he'll be a better asset backstage for the guys than he will necessarily for the fans. I don't know. Maybe I'll be wrong. And maybe when they bring in a Mark Henry or a Big Show or Paul White, I guess I'm supposed to say Paul White now. I'm still getting used to that. When they bring in a Mark Henry or Paul White for a match, maybe I'll be more excited about it. AEW tends to do a good job with these legends and celebrities and all that stuff with, you know, accentuating the positives, hiding the negatives. Just look at Double or Nothing as an example. But I don't know. I guess I'm just not super hyped about that. I'm super hyped that Mark Henry is in AEW and is going to be on commentary. I think if you guys listen to Busted Open, he has a really good way of dictating himself, and I'm excited for that. And that actually brings me to my next point that I meant to talk about at the top of the show here, but I guess this is a perfect place to transition into it before we get to Vicky Guerrero. Jim Ross. Guys, Jim Ross. I love Jim Ross. I really think he adds a lot on commentary. I think he is arguably the best commentator of all time. And I don't think that's too much of a stretch. I think a lot of people would agree in that. And I think he holds a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people. So I love Jim Ross. I want to preface all this with that. I think he's super important at AEW, adding credibility to the show, amongst many other things. But I guess my problem with Jim Ross lately is that, I don't know if anybody else notices this, but he's losing it. And as we all do, and he's also got a million health issues, obviously. So, you know, this is not like I'm not trying to talk poorly about Jim Ross just to talk poorly about Jim Ross. I think it's awesome that he's on the AEW commentary team, but I got a good view of it at Double or Nothing, and I noticed it even more in this show. And I don't need to, like, point out his mistakes in the show just to point out his mistakes. You guys hear it. I'm just curious, again, you know, let me know your guys' thoughts. Does anybody else feel like it's time? Maybe it's not time, but Jim Ross is definitely starting to lose it a little bit. And loses, like, let me put it this way. He's losing his crispness in commentary. Because guess what? That happens when we get older, obviously, and when you're battling all these awful health issues that he has, like, it's only a matter of time. Father Time catches up with all of us. So I just wonder, you know, when is it going to be the time where Jim Ross steps down, and who's going to tell him that it's time? And I don't know. I know AEW will handle that with respect and handle him with respect. I think it's a good thing that they're getting guys like the Big Show or Paul White. Paul freaking White, not the Big Show. They're getting guys like Paul White, Mark Henry, you know, and other credible sources to come step in, and at least it's not Adnan Virk, guys. But to step in and, you know, be able to be there for eventually when Jim Ross's time, you know, ends as a commentator on AEW. Maybe he steps into a different role. I don't know. I think I have faith that AEW will take care of him for sure. But, you know, Ashley and I were talking about it on the Double or Nothing review that Taz, put Taz on commentary, please. We both agreed that Michael Cole and Taz were probably one of the most underrated commentary teams ever. Like, he is so good at what he does. So it's good to see that there are a lot of other options when, you know, Jim Ross's time comes up. Eventually, again, like I said, Father Time catches up with all of us. It's nothing personal against Jim Ross. I love Jim Ross, and I want to see him on commentary for as long as possible. But I also want to see him on commentary until he can no longer do the job that I believe that he would want to do, as good of a job as he would want to do. So just wanted to get that out there and make sure I mentioned something about that. But now, guys, the biggest shocker of the night. Vicky Guerrero comes down to the ring, obviously, while Mark Henry and Tony Schiavone are still in the ring. And we get the dreaded excuse me's. Never gets old. Never gets old. She is so good at what she does, man. One of the most underrated managers of all time. I'd put her in the top 10 for sure. Without a doubt, I'd put her in the top 10. Conversation for the top 5, of course. But she comes down to the ring and tells Mark Henry and Tony Schiavone to get the hell out of the ring. And they just kind of are like, okay, I'm not messing with that. And I don't know. I don't blame them, guys. I don't think I'd mess with Vicky Guerrero's excuse me's either. But she says she's here to introduce a man who's won championships all around the world, a third generation wrestler. And she introduces none other than Andrade El Idolo. Guys, Andrade is all elite. He basically comes to the ring, gets on the mic, no music or anything. He just comes to the ring, looks like a dime piece, by the way. In that green suit, he looked awesome. But he comes to the ring and essentially says that he used to think he was the face of the Latinos, but today he's saying he's going to be the new face of all elite wrestling. So let me start here, I guess. Andrade, like I said, looked awesome. It seems like he's coming to AEW to play a heel, I assume, and that's probably for the best. It seems like that's where he plays his best role from what I've seen of him. Again, I'm sure a lot of you are way more versed in the career of Andrade than I am, but so it sounds like he's going to play a heel, obviously, with Vicky Guerrero as his manager. I don't think you can really play a face with Vicky Guerrero as your manager at this point, at least. And he looks great. But did anyone else feel like this was super underwhelming? And I think a lot of it is due to the shock of the fans. If you looked at, you know, a lot of the faces in the audience, like, people were, like, looking around when she said his name. Like, If I were to have done this, I probably would have, one, had some music play. And then maybe not even had his name on, like, the entrance videos that they have. But I would have had Vicky Guerrero say something like, she's going to, you know, she's introducing a new wrestler. He's won championships all around the world. Third generation wrestler. This man. Or something like that. And then have Andrade come out. And you get the immediate pop of when he comes out rather than his name being introduced. It reminded me of that time Seth Rollins, I forget who he was even facing, but he introduces a tag team partner and he says something like, if you're going to have this person in your corner, I'm going to have a lunatic in mine or something like that. And then there's one pop and then the music plays. And then, you know, the second pop for when Dean Ambrose comes out, Dean Ambrose at the time, obviously, Jon Moxley comes out, is not nearly as big as it would have been if he just came out. And so you almost want to, like, not say the person's name before they're introduced. Kind of like when Christian came out. I mean, obviously, we all know that was kind of underwhelming because we were all expecting Brock Lesnar or CM Punk or somebody. And as great as Christian is, he's not CM Punk or Brock Lesnar. So, but there's a certain reaction that you get when you either play the music that everybody knows, you know, the glass shatter, the rocks, if you know, the smelling thing, John Cena's one thing, and then, you know, whoever, right? When that music plays, there's a certain noise that, like, erupts right when the fans, you have, like, that quick brief second where you're like, wait, who's that? Oh my God, it's this person. And so obviously, I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't be as familiar with Andrade or if he had new music, but I guarantee if you played some music and he walked out of that little tunnel, like, people would have popped huge. And maybe they didn't want that because they want him to be a heel. I don't know. I just thought this introduction was kind of ho-hum, and which sucks because this is a giant acquisition for AEW. I'm hoping, guys, it's followed by an Aleister Black or, excuse me, I forget his name, Tommy something, or Buddy Murphy. I think two guys, and Ruby Riott, again, I don't know what names they're going to go by, obviously, now. I have a feeling that they will go back to what names they used to go by on the independents, but I just felt like this was super underwhelming, and so maybe, you know, maybe You only get your first introduction to a company like that as a big star once. And if I were Andrade, I probably would have been pissed that this is how it went down. So that's all I'll say about that, guys. Though, I mean, maybe we have a podcast on Patreon. Obviously, guys, we're on Patreon. $1 a month. You get all of these shows ad-free here on the WWE Podcast. And you get some extra shows. I pop on there from time to time and throw out some random shows like I've done, you know. The most recent one is, will WWE get good again when fans return? I did something about the women's division. You know, and maybe we do a show on dream booking Andrade in AEW. Because there's definitely a whole bunch of talk about there that I will not obviously divulge on here on this podcast. But definitely a super exciting acquisition, like I said. And I'm pumped to see what Andrade does next in AEW, guys. I mean, of course, you know, he was talking about challenging Kenny Omega for what's the title's name? I'm blanking on the name of the title, guys, but not the All Elite Wrestling, or not the All Elite World Heavyweight Championship. Why am I calling it that? Not the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, but a different match, a different title, obviously. God, I'm all out of sorts today, guys. Bear with me. All right, so, you know, there's obviously that booking that's going to go down, but if you guys want to hear that podcast, let me know, and we can put that on the Patreon exclusive feed. $1 a month, guys. You get all this stuff for free. Not for free. What am I saying? You get all this stuff ad-free, $1 a month, and some extra content, too. And if you sign up for the Raw tier, you get a free Discord server during WWE pay-per-views Matt throws out there, and you can be a part of that discussion. And you get a show called What Ifs with Anthony DeMarco and Matt talking about things like what if CM Punk, you know, returned, or what if The Rock never went to Hollywood. Good stuff like that. So go check it out. Plug over, guys. Patreon. A lot of awesome stuff going on over there. So, all right. Next up, after Andrade, we go to break, and then we come back, and we have the Nightmare Family, Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson versus The Factory, Anthony Ogogo and QT Marshall. And to make a long story go away, guys, The Factory wins by pinfall because Ogogo comes in. Aaron Solo runs in and distracts the referee, of course, because another distraction finish. Ogogo hits a knockout punch, apparently, to Cody Rhodes, hits him right in the jaw. It looked good. I'll tell him that. It looked good. And then QT Marshall gets the pinfall on Cody Rhodes and gets on the mic and essentially says he told all of us that he could do it. He could pin Cody Rhodes, and he does it. And we're all sitting there like, you're an idiot because Anthony Ogogo did all the work and you were basically getting beat most of this match. So in regards to the match itself, guys, kind of hard to analyze because, again, another distraction finish. Two matches in a row, both distraction finishes. And I get these guys are heels, but, like, you can win as a heel and still win as a heel. It's almost more annoying if you win as a heel because, like, I don't know about you guys. Like, if someone is goofy and stupid as QT Marshall freaking pin Cody Rhodes clean, I'd be like, what the hell? And I'm not saying that's what they should do, but I'm just, my point being is that, like, I feel like they booked themselves in a corner with this match, and the whole purpose of this match was to get the heat back on Anthony Ogogo. I don't know, guys. Maybe you could have had him go over at the pay-per-view. This is very Triple H of Cody Rhodes. You know, like, let me beat you at WrestleMania, but then you can get the pinfall at Extreme Rules. But when we all go back and remember a feud, we remember the match at WrestleMania. We don't remember the match at Extreme Rules. If you guys know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. But it's like really golden shovel-y, you know? And I hate that. Anthony Ogogo, to me, this didn't work. This was cheap. I sound like a freaking bird. This was a cheap way to get Anthony Ogogo's heat back because they couldn't just have him go over at the pay-per-view. Again, I'm going to preface all this with, or a side note to all this, and I'll say that I have a trust in AEW that I don't know if they deserve at this point anymore. That's a whole nother conversation. That there's a plan to this. But if this was the plan, I don't know if I agree with it. And the only thing I'll say about this match, other than all that, guys, is that Lee Johnson looked great. Love Lee Johnson. Big shoddy Lee Johnson. I'm excited for it to see what is for him later on in the future. All right, so after this match, like I said, we have Marshall, you know, yelling at Tony Schiavone, essentially saying, like, I did it, I pinned Cody Rhodes, whatever. And, you know, we all know that's not what happened because he has Anthony Ogogo, which is like a good heel tactic, guys. And I think if this there wasn't so many distraction finishes going on lately, I'd be totally fine with this. But another one, another needed Aaron Solo run-in, whoever, Brandon Cut, like another distraction finish. Like it worked at Double or Nothing with Don Callis' interference and all this stuff, but like it's getting to be too much, guys. Tell me again, though, tell me what you think. Maybe I'm just being critical, but I guess that's kind of my job. All right, so after this match and Marshall getting on the mic and thinking that he, you know, won the world title, we get a recap of Stadium Stampede and the Inner Circle make their entrance. We obviously get the whole crowd singing Judas, and Chris Jericho is eating it up. And you know what? Good for him, because the man's been wrestling for 30 years and he deserves it. Putting on amazing matches and great character development for 30 years. Like, people are saying Chris Jericho is getting too much of an ego. I've stated here on this podcast that I think it's definitely hindering this program as a whole, and we'll talk about that more for sure later on, I'm sure. But I don't know. The man kind of deserves to just be able to, like, soak it all in. Drink it in, man. So Chris Jericho gets on the mic. He thanks everybody for their support and lets everybody know, you know, pulls an Oprah, says, you get a shirt, you get a shirt, and you get a shirt, and you all get a shirt. Look under your chairs and you all get an Inner Circle free Stadium Stampede t-shirt. And then he says the reason the Inner Circle is still together here tonight is because of Sammy Guevara. And Sammy Guevara gets Sammy Chance, obviously, and he talks about just the brotherhood and, you know, calls Sean Spears an idiot. And basically says that this whole thing isn't over. Santana asks what they really accomplished aside from keeping their crew together, because they still have to walk past the Pinnacle in the hallways and deal with them. And the only real accomplishment would be leaving them lying in a ditch on the side of the road on I-95 somewhere. I love that. I just love when Santana gets on the mic, guys. Jake Hager tells them, as in the Pinnacle, to man up and go ahead and take their ass whippings again until they say it's over, the Inner Circle say it's over. And he's going to pull Wardlow's man card first, which I don't know what that means. I don't know about anybody else, but I think it essentially means he's going to challenge Wardlow as a man, because men, big men slapping each other around in the ring, you know. But instead of the ring, guys, he's going to challenge Wardlow to an MMA cage fight in 2 weeks. I don't know. That's something that we will definitely get into. That's another idea for a podcast, too, to talk about how that whole thing is going to go down, if you guys are interested in hearing about that or more, diving deeper into that. But yeah, guys, I mean, that, before we continue on with the rest of the segment, we can quickly kind of cover this. I am a little worried about this. And you know why I'm worried about this is because of that damn company, WWE, and their stupid Raw Underground and their fake MMA fighting. And you know, like, our minds, or at least my mind, is so tainted by a lot of the stuff WWE does that I don't believe that another company can do it right. So for like the 14th time on the show, guys, I'm gonna say that for some reason I'm giving AEW the benefit of the doubt again with this, and I believe that they know what they're doing to some extent. Because if they don't, this could be disastrous. Unless Wardlow and Jake Hager are going to have a real MMA fight. Like real, no pulling punches, all that stuff. Like a real MMA fight. I don't know how else this goes down. Because fake MMA fighting is, it just doesn't work. It does not work. Either pro wrestle or actually fight in MMA. The in-between thing doesn't work. And who knows? Again, I'm saying that from what I've seen in past experience. Maybe it will work. Maybe AEW has found the formula to make this work. But I don't know, guys. Maybe, let me know if you guys are excited about this. Awesome. I have a hint of intrigue, and I'll give them that. I'm intrigued. And I will be excited to see how they pull this off. So, At the very least, I feel that way about it. So I'm not poo-pooing on it yet. We're gonna see how it goes, you know? With a lot of this other stuff, I have faith. And again, guys, I had faith in Stadium Stampede, and that just really didn't do it for me, so. All right, anyway, Jericho says that he gets pissed off when he thinks about all the guys at the Pinnacle, and he gets pissed off when he thinks about MJF, and he knows that Sammy Guevara and MJF also have unfinished business, but he says that he thinks about that that being pushed off the top of the cage every single day, that he's just trying to end his career and possibly his life, and he's never going to be the same. Meanwhile, I feel like they're trying to sell it to me, guys, and I'm not being sold, because guess what? They were back the next week spraying a little bit of the bubbly or a lot of bit of the bubbly all over the Pinnacle. So, sorry. I don't buy it. Whenever he says stuff like this, I don't buy it. One, because we clearly saw him fall on a crash mat and the production was terrible. And then two, because they came back the next week and no sold it. So you can't sell it after no selling it. Sorry, it just doesn't work. And he says that MJF calls him the GOAT. And if he's as good as he thinks he is, if he's as good as being able to build AEW into the greatest wrestling company in the world, which it already is, he's going to beat MJF. And then he says, I will repeat, I am going to beat MJF, and that the Inner Circle never forgives and never forgets. And then we go to break. And obviously we come back and we get a vignette from the Best Friends and Orange Cassidy and Kenny Omega and Don Callis. But before we get into that, in regards to what Chris Jericho said in the promo that he cut, I said to you guys already, you know, I don't buy it anymore. I'm so not into this feud anymore. Stadium Stampede was kind of the nail in the coffin for me. If this was the plan, it's a bad plan. And if they're calling an audible, maybe I have a little bit more understanding. But I don't get what the hell they're doing with this. I think the real issue behind all this, and the reason that a lot of this stuff isn't hitting for me, because you can be a great promo, but if what you're talking about isn't happening or has no substance to it, then it doesn't matter what you're saying. And so for me, none of this matters, because the Pinnacle has no heat. I almost feel bad for the Pinnacle. You know, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, right? Does this whole diabolical plan to turn on the Inner Circle. And what does he get for it? He gets the, you know, crap beat out of him out of Blood and Guts. Pushes Jericho off a roof. Jericho comes back the next week and no-sells it, along with the rest of the Inner Circle. Not a bandage on anybody, besides the arm cast, obviously. And then they get beat at Stadium Stampede. And for the most part, by the way, guys, Chris Jericho dominated MJF at Stadium Stampede. And so I get the idea of, oh, it's kind of their home turf. They've been there before. So unnecessary of a match. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, sequentially made no sense. The Pinnacle has no more heat. And so I don't care. You essentially are beating up jobbers for me at this point and cutting promos about how you're going to do it. I don't care. I'm more interested in this faux MMA fight than I am in anything that Chris Jericho and MJF have going on, because I feel like they're relying too much on the fact that Chris Jericho and MJF are such good promos, and this whole feud is making no, it's such a hit, it's such a miss, it's so not hitting, guys. It is a swing and a miss over and over again, and I'm done giving my benefit of the doubt. Done with this. I am uninterested in this. I think the Inner Circle are cool. I think the Pinnacle were cool, but they're not really anymore. They just look like a bunch of goofballs who get beat every time. Or if they don't get beat, like, their win gets no-sold. MJF had 1 week to come out and celebrate, guys, and he didn't. He had, like, 5 minutes to come out and celebrate before the Inner Circle came and interrupted him. That is not how you retain heat as a heel. This has been rushed and unnecessary, and I don't know why they're doing it. I hope there's a reason, but... All right, so anyways, we like I said before, we get to the Best Friends vignette. You know, essentially, they say that Kenny Omega, you know, Orange Cassidy had him beat twice and, you know, crap on Don Callis. And Orange Cassidy says that it isn't over. And then we get a promo from Don Callis and Kenny Omega, who are editing a highlight package of the match of that roll-up and how Kenny Omega won. And they essentially just say that Jungle Boy didn't really earn his title shot because the Battle Royale, or whatever it's called, the Casino Battle Royale, means nothing, which they're not wrong. Did he beat anyone in the top five or whatever? Again, we all know Jungle Boy's not going to win, because nobody, even still, even if Jungle Boy was a real contender at this point, nobody who ever wins that Battle Royale wins the title. Hasn't happened yet, guys, so I don't give a crap about the Battle Royale or its winner. This will be a great match. I'm looking forward to this match, and it is a great excuse to get to this match, and I'll take it like that. But it doesn't mean anything, you know what I mean? This is just going to be a great match for great match sake and a way to get to a great match without really telling the story. Obviously, they're doing that now, which is nice, but yeah, so he says Jungle Boy didn't really earn his title shot and that he's no Jungle Man or Jungle Champion. He's just a Jungle Boy. And he's a fun guy to cheer, similar to kind of how he was talking about Orange Cassidy. And Kenny Omega loves his music. And they sing, him and Don Callis sing a little bit, and then that's it. So, I don't know, good stuff. Nothing special by either of these guys, but I think Kenny Omega is such a great heel, man. And he's doing this, playing this role perfectly of playing on all of us who obviously know, you know, it's almost like playing off that Daniel Bryan story over and over again. Like the B plus player. Jungle Boy's never going to win. And we all pretty much know he's not going to win. And we all kind of knew Orange Cassidy wasn't going to win or Pac. But in the match, they give us those amazing hope spots and they have a chance. So who knows, guys? Maybe I'm wrong. I'll eat my words if Jungle Boy wins. But I just thought this was a good way to start to tell a story for a match that had no story because it started out with a casino battle royale. And speaking of Jungle Boy, the next match that we had was Christian Cage and Jungle Boy versus Private Party and Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn. First things first, guys, I hate that they don't wrestle in wrestling gear anymore. I get it. But again, here's another group of heels that has a lot of money and that's why they're heels. I mean, again, they're heels because they cheat and all this other stuff. But like, I don't know, guys, like, lack of creativity for me on the heel side, and I feel like no one else is really pointing that out. This is a great match overall. Really fun to see Christian Cage and Jungle Boy team together. Both Christian Cage and Jungle Boy win by submission. Obviously, Jungle Boy has the snare trap on Mark Quinn, and this was a fun match. Before we get into the post match, I want to talk about this really quickly. Christian Cage developing a relationship and like, I don't know if this is the plan, but developing a, like a, not a real tag team, but just a relationship with Jungle Boy where they can tag team together whenever need be would be really cool, I think, because again, Christian Cage in his veteran experience of being in being a tag team wrestler will have so much to offer for Jungle Boy. The one thing I'll say, though, if they do that, it's a little bit funny because you also have Jurassic Express, and I don't want to, like, undersell Luchasaurus or Marcus Stunt or any of these guys, obviously, who are very talented in their own right. You guys know I am a huge Luchasaurus fan. But, obviously, Jungle Boy is the star of this group, and I'd like to see him kind of have this nice little relationship with Christian where they're not necessarily an official tag team, but they can tag team when they need to. I think it allows Jungle Boy to learn a lot from Christian. But then also, I think, like, if Christian Cage eventually turns heel, which I assume he will, because we will all, it's just, when the character gets dry, that's kind of where you go. What a perfect person to turn on other than Jungle Boy, like one of the most beloved wrestlers in AEW by the fans today. So, overall, I think AEW already has a plan year long with just this simple team last night on AEW. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but guys, I'd be really excited about that. And this is a company that books long term. So, all right, so post match, guys, Matt Hardy hits a twist of fate on Christian on the ramp, and then Jungle Boy runs him off. And so I assume we're getting a Matt Hardy and Christian match. I say they need to wait till they have a bigger audience for that, guys, because the only thing that's going to be exciting about that match is the nostalgia. Guys, Matt Hardy is just not for me anymore in the ring. Just can't go like he used to, which is fine. Because, guys, like I said, Father Time catches up with everybody. And I have massive amounts of respect for Matt Hardy and what he's done for the business and how talented he is. He's just not what he used to be. And this is all Elite Wrestling, not all nostalgia wrestling and not all old guy wrestling. So then after that, we get a video package from Team Taz. They're talking about the events at Double or Nothing. And I'm getting another phone call, guys. I'm going to have to turn things on Do Not Disturb. I didn't know I was that popular. All right. Anyways, Taz challenges Hangman Page for a tag team match. He says, get a partner of your choice. And Brian Cage and Powerhouse Will Hobbs will challenge them. He says, pick anybody of the Dark Order. And I'm really upset, guys, because if I were to handpick anybody for the Dark Order for Hangman to tag team with again, it would be John Silver. And John Silver is obviously injured right now. So that can't happen. But I'm excited for this. I'm happy this is kind of continuing. I thought this was pretty much over, but I'm down to see these guys go at it again. This was my favorite match, Double or Nothing. And I think what this will be is kind of not necessarily an extension of the feud, but more of an extension and more of a vehicle for the storytelling of the problems in Team Taz, which we all can see. I don't know if you guys saw Ricky Starks during this promo just walks off, gives a face. I am like all for the feud between Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. And Ricky Starks obviously continuing to be a Team Taz guy. And I think Ricky Starks also has an amazing babyface run in his future. I think Ashley Mann actually said that last week on the show. I can't take credit for that one. I don't know if you can be that good looking and be a face, though. But who knows? Ricky Starks, the piece Ricky Starks, makes all of these video packages so much more interesting because I always look for him to see what his reaction to what's going on is, because it tells a story without even having to say anything. So, really simple, small detail, but guys, just keep an eye out. If you don't watch Ricky Starks during these Team Taz things, keep an eye out on him. And all right, next up, back in the ring, we get Tony Schiavone introducing Darby Allin and Sting. Sting takes the mic from him and says that, you know, he's had a lot of experience. He's so sweet, though. Wait, before I go into that, Sting's like, is it all right if I take the microphone? Like, it's not like every other heel who just grabs the microphone from poor Tony Schiavone. That's a good, I know it sounds silly, but it's those little details, guys, that are, like, important. But so, yes, he takes the mic, or asks to take the microphone from him, and says, essentially, that he's had a lot of great experiences in wrestling, but, in his career, but a Double or Nothing was a night he's never gonna forget, and he, it stands up to anything he's done in the business, and, you know, guys, obviously, maybe not the exact, like, wrestling and moves and stuff that he's done in matches beforehand, but guys, the excitement factor behind that, I think it does. But again, I'm 23, so take that with a grain of salt. He thanks everybody for obviously cheering him on and being with him this entire time on his journey in wrestling, and then Scorpio Sky pops up slow clapping on the Tron, and All Ego Ethan Page is with him as well. Again, guys, I think All Ego Ethan Page looks like a star. And those sunglasses, without them, he's got such great eyes. Reminds me of Edge. Just throwing that out there before I forget to say that. So, long story go away. Scorpio Sky congratulates him and sees why they call him an icon now. Tell him that he even smells good. I popped for that. I thought that was funny. And he was so good that he even dragged Darby Allin over the finish line. You know what, guys? I'm sorry. I'm turning my phone on. Do not disturb. But it comes up on my computer anyways. So, where was I? All right. I should probably cut all this out. But am I going to do that, guys? Do I ever? No, I'm not. All right. So, Scorpio Sky says that, you know, Sting was so good that he even dragged Darby Allin over the finish line, like literally and physically, when he dragged him out of the crowd because, you know, Darby Allin got yeeted into the crowd by All Ego Ethan Page. Ethan Page, I don't know why I want to say All Ego Ethan Page. I guess I like that a lot. But Page says, you know why? Because there's so many Pages and Cages and Wages, and there's like two Pages and two Cages. You know what, guys? I think Adam Page and Ethan Page should team up against Christian Cage and Brian Cage. Team of the brothers. Anyways, all right. I'm going way off track. Ethan Page says that if it wasn't for Sting, Darby Allin would be still laying in the spot in the crowd that he threw him into. And he basically calls Darby Allin spineless, codependent bitch. I never know if I gotta come up with a different word. Can we call it, we're just gonna call it a B from now on. Or maybe I'll spell it out on this show. In case you're with kids that can't spell. Or you can't spell. That's okay. Everybody's welcome here on the unofficial WWE podcast. All right, I'm going off topic again. So, and then Scorpio Sky challenges Darby Allin to go find a tag team partner that isn't Sting to prove him wrong. And yeah. Weird, right? Did anybody else feel this way? To me, this came off as, Hi, we're Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. We talked crap about Sting for how long? And then we couldn't beat him. And so instead of, you know, dealing with that and fixing our all egos, we're just going to challenge the little guy and tell him that he's not allowed to pick Sting on the playground. He's not allowed to have Sting on his team. Sting has to be the designated pitcher because whenever Sting's on someone's team, that team always wins, and it's not fair, guys. Like, we are not playing kickball in the playground. This is all Elite Wrestling. Did nobody else have a problem with this? This was weird to me. And I, guys, I'm on the Ethan Page bandwagon. He has convinced me in this program. And I know this was kind of like a nice little program to have a good feel-good moment at AEW. And I definitely think there needs to be some kind of a little bit more of a conclusion so these two guys can move on. But I don't know, guys. If I were them, I'd want... This is the way I would go with it. I would have had Ethan Page turn on Scorpio Sky. Maybe they can do this afterwards, too, after this next match with Darby Allin. Scorpio Sky takes the pinfall again. Ethan Page turns on Scorpio Sky. Ethan Page gets to be the heel. Scorpio Sky gets to be a babyface again. And you have a good program between the two of them. And essentially, Scorpio Sky makes good with Sting and Darby Allin. I think that would be really cool. And maybe Ethan Page gets some other, like, behind. I think he is a guy who could lead his own faction. I really have enough faith in Ethan Page for that. Get two big heavies for him, and then you get a six-man tag, Sting, Darby Allin, Scorpio Sky, or just a four-man tag, regular tag team match of Darby Allin and somebody versus Ethan Page and two heavies, or just Ethan Page and one heavy. I don't know. That sounds way more interesting to me, guys, than all of this crap once again, which is essentially, again, like, you're not allowed to pick Sting for your team because he's too good. Like, come on. How old are we? So that's what I thought about that. All right, when we come back, obviously, there are a bunch of wrestlers in the ring, guys, because it is time for Britt Baker, DMD, your new AEW McDonald's toy champion of the world. Sorry, your AEW Women's Champion of the World, Britt Baker. Super pumped about it. I know I'm still ragging on the title, and I will probably, you know, carry that to my grave, guys, because I think the women deserve better in this company than they get a whole lot. So, anyways, she comes down from the tube. I don't know what that's called. I'm calling it the tube. She comes out of the tube and down the ramp. And says that everybody is getting freebies tonight because apparently she got like a bunch of coupons from McDonald's. I don't know. All I know is that it made us order McDonald's for breakfast this morning. Anyways, so it worked. She got a bunch of freebies from McDonald's. And she's going to one-up Chris Jericho because she's giving everybody burger coupons to celebrate her win. And you get a burger coupon and you get a burger coupon. And no, you don't, because you all suck, essentially. She says that only, Tony Schiavone and Rebel and her are going to eat a burger, and says that DMD are the three letters that are going to take this company to a new level, and that she's going to take the women's division to a new level, and yeah, and then her, Tony Schiavone, and Rebel they toast with the burgers, and then Nyla Rose just says, no burgers for you guys, and just starts smacking the burgers out of all their hands, and then popping the balloons, and screw all this. Yeah. What? Okay. So, first of all, I'm assuming from all this that Britt Baker is staying as a heel because she, you know, pulled the Oprah and said, no Oprah for you guys. That's a heel move, right? Don't mess with Oprah. And then, wasn't Nyla Rose a heel? Remember that, like, a couple weeks or months ago now? Oh, my God. Time is really blending together, guys. A couple months ago, like, her, Nyla Rose, and I forget who. Was it the Bunny? I don't know. They all came out and, like, attacked Karrueshita and people, and, like, they never just followed up with that. I don't know, guys. I'm lost in this women's division. So, is Nyla Rose a babyface? I don't know if it's a babyface thing to smack burgers out of Tony Schiavone's hand and pop a bunch of balloons. Was she just angry? Like, I'm just so lost in the dynamic of this. This whole thing was kind of clunky and weird. This Britt Baker deserves so. If I were to have booked this again, I always try to bring it back to this because I want to make sure I'm trying to give like constructive criticism rather than just ragging on stuff. I would have just had Britt Baker and Rebel come out, maybe a couple balloons or something, and cut a scalding promo. The burger thing was fine. Whatever. If you want to do that, fine. Weird, though. Weird. I did not get this. This is another thing in this show that did not hit for me. If you guys haven't noticed, I wasn't really a fan of this show overall. I was really disappointed. And you know what? Last week, AEW did 5.5, I think, in the ratings, which is a huge drop. And I understand it's the time slot. I'm not blaming anything else really besides that. But I don't know. It's just still kind of concerning. I guarantee that this didn't do nearly as much as 5.5, you know, at least in quality. I think last week's show was better than this one for sure, and that's not saying much. So after this weird segment, we get Eddie Kingston being interviewed backstage. Essentially, he's being asked why he went out and saved them, and Death Triangle comes up before he can even say anything and says they don't want his help and to keep his nose out of their business. And Eddie Kingston makes fun of Pac's little thing and calls him the other B word, and says that he's going to keep it sweet and simple, and that the enemy of his enemy is his friend, and they should let that marinate in their brains, and then he just walks off. I like this. I thought this was really well done. Eddie Kingston's phenomenal. All right. Next up, guys, we had Red Velvet versus the Bunny. This match got good. In the beginning, it was not great. It starts off with a botch right away. You know, they botched that little beginning part. It was like a weird kick and sling. I don't know. But then Red Velvet hits a great standing moonsault. Looks like she perfected that. She hits a terrible suicide dive. Like, it looked, I mean, not like it looked awful, like the actual move. It was great. She hit Bunny. But, like, the way she landed, she, like, did a full flip, I think. I don't know what. I worry about Red Velvet, guys, because I think she's got so much passion and she wants to be so good. And she is really good, but she's still so green. I'm scared she's going to really hurt herself with some of this stuff. Reminded me of the Lita, the famous Lita suicide dive spot. So, anyways, long story go away, guys. Red Velvet wins by pinfall with the Just Desserts, which looked great, by the way. Looked really good. But, guys, Bunny, the Bunny, I never feel like I can take this seriously when I talk about this. The Bunny does not get enough credit. Really good wrestler. And she really, you know, these little matches, obviously, that you know she's not going to win. But I go back to the Ty Conti one. She fits perfectly. She slides right in. And she does a really good job as a heel wrestler. And she hits her moves well. I wouldn't call her stiff, but she hits her moves well. And I don't think we talk about the Bunny enough, guys. I think the Bunny's got a better future than maybe we're giving her credit for. Maybe she doesn't, but she deserves it for sure. So, all right. Obviously, after that, we get the announcement of the next couple matches in the next couple weeks. And then we get the main event, the bull rope match. I want to say this was brutal, but it wasn't really brutal. They hit each other with the cowbell a couple times, or Dustin Rhodes hit him with the cowbell, and Nick Camarado just hit him with being Nick Camarado, and there was a table spot, and that was cool. Kind of really forced table spot. You know, the turnbuckle pad gets taken off. There's an attempted distraction finish with Aaron Solo again, but Colton Gunn comes out and makes the save. And Dustin Rhodes wins by pinfall with a diving bulldog. And he celebrates with the crowd, and it was a good way to go off the air. But I just think, guys, I don't know, man. The factory is really not getting off to a good start. And I think Nick Camarado suffers a lot less in a loss than Anthony Ogogo did on pay-per-view. I think this wasn't a big deal that Dustin Rhodes got the win. In fact, guys, I probably would have had, you know, Anthony Ogogo go over at the pay-per-view and go over again tonight, if that's what the plan was, and then have Dustin Rhodes go over in this match. I just felt like, man, they are 50-50 booking like nobody's business. Does anybody else feel that way? And I hate saying that about AEW, because I actually feel like they're really good about not doing that. But what do you know? 50-50 booking of Anthony Ogogo. And so, I'm no longer invested in this Factory versus the Nightmare Family thing. They have lost me again, so they're going to have to do a lot more work than a bull rope match to pull me back in. And a good table spot. But the crowd was really into it. And the crowd seemed to be really into Dustin Rhodes. And so that was good. So overall, guys, I was unimpressed by AEW Dynamite this week. hate to say it, but I think there were some good spots and some good wrestling, but a lot of botchy, clunky moments and weird. I don't know where a lot of this is going, and I am not invested in two big faction versus faction feuds. What the hell is this Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page thing saying that Darby Allin isn't allowed to pick Sting? Like Sting is the older kid on the football field. I don't know. It's weird, guys. It's weird. There's a lot of weird stuff going on, and I'm going to end the show on that. I hope that they bring this around. You know, obviously, there are a lot of great matches coming up. I don't have time to preview them for you guys this week. I still have our highs and lows that's coming out today, later today for you guys, and I'm getting the second vaccine. So a lot going on today, but I will definitely talk to you guys, and we'll be talking a little bit more about AEW for sure on the highs and lows, because I will give you a quick early spoiler that I can definitely promise you that AEW Double or Nothing this Sunday definitely took a high for the week. What match? You guys probably have an idea, but I'm not going to tell you. You got to go listen to the show. So hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and I'll talk to you next time.